Jesus didn't have a problem with people that's in the streets. He had a problem with religious people.
How can I help anybody when I'm not even, when I was not even able to help my own son?
I would never do that. I would never do that. And I became that in a matter of minutes when they took my pain pills away.
And I said, I'm not where I want to be, but thank God I'm not what I used to be.
This is Faith in Your Recovery. I am Randy Davis. Welcome to the battle. Hey, we want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in and turning on to Faith in Your Recovery, our podcast. We're glad to have you with us. Today's going to be something that's extremely unique for me. Out of our 175 plus or minus episodes, we've never approached this. Number one, we're going to do two episodes, one right after the other. That's not truly what I'm talking about yet. This first episode is going to be Dania. After that, Dania and her husband are going to come together and we're going to do another episode. It's about relationships. That is a piece of property that we haven't walked on yet. That's a journey that we haven't been involved with. So we look forward to getting to share that with you. Just want you to hang on. We'll make the transition in between as quickly as possible. But as I said a moment, we've got Zach's wife. She stands with her own identity, but they claim each other. I know that for a fact. It's Dania Dodd. Welcome, Dania.
Hi, Randy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're looking forward to this. We had Eric last week, and he made it clear that you would be a part of this today, and we're glad we were able to work that out, get all the pieces to come together, and here we are, so we're thankful for it. So let's just begin. Tell the folks where you're at in life today. Tell them who Dania is. Share with them some of your joys, and then we'll go back and look at those rougher times.
Sure. So today I am a wife. I am a mother. I am active in bringing people to Jesus every day. We are active in church and small group. I serve in church on Sundays. I am a full-time administrative assistant. Just doing many things. We started the Brianna's Hope meeting at the river.
And we're excited about that. Yeah. We're glad to have you guys on board. You've gotten off to a great start. You've got an average, I think, of like 37 people attending each week. I'm sure that's going to grow. Tell the folks the name of your church and where it's located.
So our church is called the River Church. It is in Marion, Indiana, on Linfesty. It's a big church. It's a great church, a loving church, an accepting church, and we are just happy to partner up with them to be able to bring Brianna's Hope there.
Sounds like a good place to call home for you guys
it
and
is.
Many others, as I well know. So we're excited, as I said, to have you on board, to see another chapter start. I know, Marion, the area has fought its battles over the year when it comes to addiction, but I know that they're very strong in their recovery effort as well. Yeah?
They are. Yep. Grant County Drug Court. All the recovery courts, Grant County Probation, I know they have really taken a stance against addiction. They've educated themselves, helped educate the community, and
what
everyone
an
in
asset.
It.
What an asset to
Huge.
A community to have all of those,
yep.
Not just the recovery, but everything that goes with that. So, Daniel, let's step back now. Step back to your earlier life prior to any addiction. What was life like? How many brothers and sisters? Yeah.
Yeah. So I have amazing parents. Unfortunately, my dad passed away early in my recovery. I was about 4 months clean, but let me go back more than that. So I had a great childhood. Both parents, they were together for 40 years, married for 30 years. They both owned very successful businesses. I never grew up around drugs or alcohol. I did great in school. I was never a troublemaker. I have one brother who I'm also very proud of. We had a great childhood. Life was really, really good. I was not supposed to ever be in the place that I was in.
I think that you came to call yourself later an unexpected addict.
Yeah.
What were some of your hobbies and likes in your younger years before the addiction began and kicked in?
Yeah, I was a cheerleader. I loved that I had so many friends. I was popular. Like I said, I did well in school, and it kind of all started when I was in high school and thought that I was in love with a boy who lived a totally different life than I did.
He made it available to you. Is that what you're saying? If not, correct me.
Nope, not so much. So, not so much. So, like I said, we had a great childhood. My parents never fought. We never, had drugs or alcohol in our home. But he was abusive. I mean, that's okay. Just what it is. Emotionally, mentally, it didn't become physical until later on. But he pretty much broke me. He broke my spirit. And
Over how long a period of time, Dania?
We dated off and on for 4 years, so all through high school.
Battled that.
Mm-hmm. And then when we broke up, he left me broken in numerous ways. And so I started with pain pills and anxiety medication from doctors. And my addiction just took off from there. When I was growing up, we weren't educated about drugs, right? We were told to just say no. And when I'm told just to say no and not to do something, when I was younger, that just made me want to do it more. But truly, I never knew what addiction looked like. I never knew what drugs could do to someone. I never knew how addiction could affect a person. I didn't know about addiction. I wasn't educated about it. I didn't know that I ever needed to be or what it was. And so
things have changed a great deal since then, yes.
Yes,
I remember back those days. Our organization, Better Life, Brianna's Hope, just a little over 10 years, not even 10 and a half, but just a little over 10 years old. I remember the bias and the stigma, the idea back when we first started, take all those addicts, put them on a boat, ship them to a faraway island and let them live for themselves. So the attitude that they got themselves into it, let them get themselves out of it.
Yeah.
Thank God we're looking at things far more differently.
Absolutely.
Now. The stigma and the bias is still there, but nothing like it was. I remember back in that day, you wouldn't do a podcast talking about it. You had to whisper that your loved one had a problem.
And absolutely.
I'm not sure we even called it a drug issue then. It was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to where you could get a little freedom to speak it. Now we can say it out loud. I didn't say we could say it proud.
Correct.
But we can say it out loud.
That's right.
That's become a part of the healing. That's become part of the effort. That's become part of the recovery. Mm-hmm. So we continue to do that. So you had that four-year relationship. You got into some different pills and meds.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it go from there? At that point, was he totally out of your life?
He was.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So lead us forward from there.
So very quickly, I would say by the age of 19, I was in full-blown addiction. Didn't know it, didn't realize it. I just went from him to another bad relationship to another bad relationship, and just did that for years, right? Because first of all, I didn't feel, like I deserved anything else. And it's so crazy because I should have known that I did. And I should have known that that wasn't normal, to be called names. I never heard my father call my mother a name or, ever raise his voice at her, right? And so I think that's where my parents couldn't wrap their heads around why I was accepting of that. But, you know, abuse just doesn't happen all at once. It's a layered thing. And it doesn't start out like it ends, right? And so when it comes on slowly, you already care about the person. You already love them. And it's hard to step out of that. Even at 16, 17, 18 years old, it's not easy. And so by the time I was 19, I would say I was in active addiction. By the time I was 23, I definitely was an addict.
What were your drugs of choice at that time?
Heroin.
Okay.
The first time I ever withdrew, I didn't even know that I was withdrawing. I had no idea that I was withdrawing. The guy that I was dating at the time told me to do some heroin and I would feel better. And I'm like, that's not what's going to make me feel better. I have the flu. And he was like, no, you're withdrawing. And I had no idea that that's what it even was. I thought I had the worst case of the flu that I had ever had in my entire life.
I've heard people describe it as 50 times mm-hmm. the worst flu you've yeah. ever experienced.
Absolutely.
That should point us all in a direction that's not favorable toward drugs.
Correct. Yeah, you can't even explain that feeling. It's, you'd rather die.
I am sure that's the case. So that's at like the age of 23. Mm-hmm. Let's go on from there. Tell us.
Yeah, I had my first child. Her name is Callie, and she's amazing and so smart and has been there by my side, unfortunately, through active addiction. But I also drag her through recovery as well. And my 12-year-old son. I had a daughter. I have a son named Aiden. He's 12. he was little, though, when I got into recovery. He was about 2 when I got into recovery. And so Callie seen more than what she should have. It was just bad. I went to jail a few times. When I was young.
Is your daughter?
She's 16.
She's 16 mm-hmm. now. Have you had a talk with her about how a female should be treated?
Yeah, and she sees how her dad treats me. Well, Zach is her dad. My two oldest kids call him dad. We're not a blended family. We're not a, you know, mixed family. We are just a family. And nice. So, yeah.
Not everybody can say that.
No.
I wish they could, and so do they.
Yeah.
Whether they were, all of them recognize that or not.
Yeah, I tell her, don't ever settle for anyone until they treat you the way that your father treats me.
Don't ever settle.
Yeah.
I love that statement. I've used it more than once with individuals, and don't just take it because it's available.
Correct.
Find yeah. what is best
yeah.
and going to be the healthiest for you.
Yeah.
So what was the lights on moment that moved you into recovery, Dania?
It wasn't me. It was court. I had to, or I was going to go to prison. I had got in trouble a couple of times. I would stop using, finish probation, whatever. I thought that I wasn't an addict because I could stop when I needed to stop. And I just would pick right back up where I left off. But in 2014, I got into trouble and I got into drug court, into Grant County Drug Court. And it's a lot different today than it was back then. You had 3 chances and you're done. Like, that's it. No, nothing else. And I had the best probation officer. I was court ordered to go to a women's it wasn't really a recovery home. It was more of a homeless shelter. But at that time in Marion, that was the only thing that there was. It's called Open Heart Women's Shelter. It's still there. But I had the best house mother ever. Linda Johnson, she also was in recovery, is in recovery still. I still talk to her today. She taught me so much, and she taught me how to live life again with the support of my mother. That was the time that my dad passed away. I lost my father when I was 4 months clean, and then I lost my grandmother 3 months after my dad passed away, and then my other grandmother 6 months later.
That's enough to send you back into the hole that you just started climbing out of.
Yep, but I had so much support. The whole Grant County Drug Court team came to my father's funeral. They just showered me with love and support and knew what I needed when I didn't. And so I just took suggestions and I listened, and I wanted recovery more than I had ever wanted anything in my entire life.
When did you start to feel that sense of I am worthy, that, you know, that self-value, that belief in yourself that not only I can, I will, I deserve this, etc.?
I started to feel that when I could start living life without the use of drugs. It came little by little. It wasn't an overnight thing. I had to do lots of therapy, lots of counseling, lots of work on myself. And then little by little, I felt like I deserved it. I stopped using because they told me that I had to, right? But then I bought into the idea of recovery. I bought into the idea that, okay, I can do this with support.
You chose to, beyond being forced, basically.
Yeah.
You chose to participate, to involve yourself.
I did. I did. I got out of rehab. Then, and I was hungry for recovery and a different life and to give my kids a different life. I was just done at that point, and listened to everything that people who knew more than me were willing to tell me. And so, again, when I went to my first NA meeting then in 2014, there were two people at that NA meeting. And so I started bringing people, and I started making people come to NA that was in drug court. And by the time that I graduated drug court, that meeting was so big that we had to have it outside. And that was amazing.
Nice problem.
Yeah.
Nice
yeah.
problem for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
Let's move ahead a little or back up. You can tell me.
Sure.
When did Jesus recognizably come into all of this? You know, and I know he's been playing in it from day one.
He did.
But when did he manifest himself to where you were able to truly take a look at him and say, this is a pretty good option?
Yeah, so it wasn't until I stayed clean for almost 7 years, but then was in another, I met someone while I was in drug court, and I ended up marrying him, not Zach, and I ended up marrying him. He was also in a courts, he was in vet court, and he did great while he was in vet court. And then when he graduated, he started drinking, and he started drinking often and started hitting me too. And so everything that I had learned in recovery, everything that I had, went out the window. And so I moved me and my kids back to me. I had moved to Muncie with him. And so he hit me a good two or three or four times and on different occasions. And the last time that he did, I told him that me and the kids were going to a karate lesson. Me and Callie and Aiden were going to karate, and I didn't go. And we came to Marion with the clothes on our back and two black eyes and a busted lip. And then I relapsed. And so I stayed in active addiction. Zach also had got home 9 days prior to this event happening when I left Muncie. From prison.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Sure. So, I was kind of saving Zach until Zach got on in a little bit, but Zach had came home, and we had came to Marion, and he had been home for 9 days, so it didn't take him but probably 24 hours to have drugs and money and everything that we needed to be able to survive, I guess. Not survive, I don't even know what I would call it, but just getting through the day, I guess. And so pretty immediately I got pregnant. When I moved back from Marion, I immediately got a divorce. Packed all my things up in Muncie a few weeks later and brought it back to Marion and quickly got divorced. And then Zach and me and Aiden and Callie were together. And starting out, it was a terrible situation that Zach and I were in. And we got pregnant with our daughter, Lakin. And so when I got pregnant, we stopped using, so that she wouldn't be taken from us. So that was that. But then they did get taken later on. I don't know if you want me to save all that for when Zach is
no,
on,
go
but
ahead
he kind of,
share it now, later we can repeat some of this.
Okay.
It'll be different folks listening.
Okay, great. So yeah. Lakin is almost getting ready to turn 5, and we have been, active and doing great, when they had got taken, in 2020, and ever since then we found recovery, we found Jesus, we got invited to go to the river, and that was it, that's all it took.
So, how long were the kids gone? How long were they taken from you?
So they were gone the minimum time that they could be gone. I can't remember exactly how long, but that was really hard. Zach was in jail. The kids were all in foster care except for the baby. She was with Zach's sister, but there was a no contact order on the kids. We couldn't talk to them. I could only see them for 1 hour, one day a week, with supervision while Zach was in jail. And that was very hard. It was very hard, but, it was what it took, right? It made us hit rock bottom. It was so painful. I don't like to think about it, but that's what it took, right? That was the most tired and, I don't even have words for how my soul felt during that time. But again, that's what it took. And
I'm sure it was too empty to be empty.
It was. That's a really good.
There was, just no positive feeling there whatsoever.
No.
The disappointment and everything that I'm sure you guys went through.
Yeah, it was terrible.
So you mentioned then you got invited to the River Church.
We did.
A friend?
So, no, not at the time, but now he and his wife are our mentor, Jonathan and Connie Derby. But, no, we had got a job. We were maybe like, I don't even know how fresh not using, right? And we got a job at the same place and never looked back. We started that job. 3 days later, we got invited to the river. We went to an interview with a Christian man, right? And I was Zach had never really held a job down before. I've had really great jobs my entire life. But I was worried that Zach wouldn't be able to find a job. And I just, I didn't know how it was going to work out. But it was for a cleaning company. And we did so well. I mean, within like 6 months, we were running a separate part of the guy's business. We were sending crews through Indiana to clean apartments, and we just excelled. But it was only because of Jesus. That's why.
I understand that totally, and obviously you do.
Yeah.
How did the Christian journey, what did it look like after you were connecting with Christ? You know, I'm sure there came that moment of commitment, that moment of baptism. If you want to share that, okay.
Sure.
But what did the journey look like? And I know it's not complete. You're not even certain where it's going to be tomorrow. None of us are, if we're truthful.
That's correct. So the journey kind of looked like, I've always known Jesus. I've always known God. I grew up in church. I went to church every weekend with my grandmother and grandfather. And so I've always believed in God. I never blamed God for the things that I was going through. I never was angry with him because of how my life turned out. I knew that I had made those choices. And so I've always prayed. I've always believed. I've always, but my relationship just wasn't great with him. And so when we got invited to the river, when we walked in, I don't know what it was like for Zach, but I know what it was like for me. I was scared walking in because it's such a big church. But the moment that Jonathan seen us coming, through the door, he just wrapped his arms around us and we were invited to sit with him and his wife. And so that's all it took, was one person inviting us.
The power of one.
Yeah.
The power of one.
Yeah. And so we do the same thing now, right? We want to make heaven crowded. And so we invite everyone that we know to church. And I always, share the River Church stuff online. And I always hashtag it, you can sit with us, because that's all it took.
There's nothing to be added to that. I know those moments. I hope I've been a part of being that one who has said, here is an empty seat and it's next to me and I'd love to have you in it.
Yeah.
Or whatever word you may choose, however you may deliver that message, that you're welcome here.
Yeah.
As well as in my heart.
That's right.
And express and show that love.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What has been the biggest struggle for you in all of this? I know that things are looking great, life's good, but I know day to day we've still got the battle.
We're
still in a sinful, fallen world. What is the biggest struggle for you, Dania?
I have too much to do. On a day-to-day basis, I don't get to go home any day after work. And so I think rest would be the biggest battle for me. But that's a good problem to have. Again, I don't really, when Jesus, Jesus died for me, right? He died for all of me, for every ugly and bad and sinful part of me. And so when I accepted him back into my life and I recommitted my life to him, I felt like all of that was just taken away. And, the person that I was then and the person that I am today are...
You're a new person
today. I'm a completely new person.
Yeah. Scripture assures us of that. So we don't have to deal with the guilt.
Yeah.
We don't have to deal with what it could have, should have.
No.
We don't have to deal with any other of that. Now, it's important to continue to seek reconciliation with others.
And it is.
Ask them to forgive us for our behaviors.
Sure.
But that just strengthens the new person that we've become, and we have the strength of Christ that allows us to accomplish that and
get there.
That's
right. Deuteronomy 31:8, he goes before us and he is with us, and that gives me all the confidence that I need.
goes before us and he is with us. Yep. And that's a great statement for this season.
Yeah, it is.
As it is. It fits so well. What are future dreams, hopes, plans for you, Dania? I know you want to be in God's will with all of it. I understand that.
Sure.
But give us some of your...
I'm doing great work with Lotus House. So it is a new organization in Marion. It's a year old, maybe. An amazing woman named Riley owns it. And she has very quickly became one of my dear friends. I do peer support work there. I volunteer all the time. I'm reachable for the girls all day, every day. I love them all so much, and they're just...
Who are the folks they deal with?
They are brand new, right? Riley is a therapist, and she did some volunteer work through Hope House and fell in love with the idea of women in recovery. And she's seen a need for it, right? And so she bought a house came up for sale two doors down from her, and she bought it and just trusted that that's exactly what she was meant to do. And so she opened it, and I was teaching mindfulness classes at Waypoint in Wabash. And so that's how I met her, and through another really great person, Dennis Allen. He was my therapist for years and years. He was my therapist all through drug court, and he's my friend today. And he's another huge person in my recovery, that has been in my recovery, that I don't know where I'd be today without him. But I met Riley through him, and Riley and I just immediately... were connected at the hip. And so I had graduated my peer support classes at that time. And so I teach the girls every Monday night. I am there. I'm there for every birthday party, every celebration, every anything. And they make it easy.
Residential.
It's residential. Yep. It's a 12-month program.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Most of our girls are in recovery courts.
How many, when you say girls, what is the census?
Okay, so we have eight women. I shouldn't say girls, I guess. Eight women. No, I'm sorry, seven women. We just got our back garage zoned for four more beds. So we are remodeling that and turning that into a small apartment with, it'll have a kitchen and a bathroom and four more beds, brand new. So we're super excited to be able to bring four more women to Lotus.
So the seven you say that are at Lotus now, is that maximum at
that's max.
This point?
Mm-hmm. It is,
okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It is. Yep. So Riley and I both are on... of the agreement and the mindset that, being able to help a smaller group of women and give them more individualized attention is where our hearts are at, instead of trying to help 30 women at once and not being able to give them everything that they need.
Gotcha.
We want to be there, for everything that they need, and so
you
or to point them in the right direction.
Alongside them in a very intense way.
Exactly.
And, okay.
Yep.
What would you say is the strength of Lotus House?
The strength. We love them before they're even coming through the door, right where they're at. And I think that's what it takes, right? So I don't care if they've ever had known recovery at all, and neither does Riley, right? We love them for right where they're at we meet them where they are. And so I think that's the difference. We don't expect anything from them when they get there.
That, I believe, has been the strength of our organization, A Better Life, Brianna's Hope.
Yeah.
We accept you raw, real, and sloppy.
Yep, it's that's right.
That's as near to being like Christ as I think we can be. He doesn't ask you to clean up before you show up. And that's the way that, you walk through the door. We're not a residential program. We're several chapters throughout the state of Indiana, but you walk through the door for a support meeting We wanted to be home for that evening and for you to think about us when you walk away.
That's right.
And I've had so many people tell me over the years, if you'd kicked me out when I came here high or drunk or whatever, there's no way I'd be in recovery today. I'd be dead.
That's right.
So, you know, we have our boundaries with things. That's simply not where we're going to sell you short, because we're there because of your problem.
That's right. It's what brings us together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a big part of it. Where do you see yourself in the future as far as helping, ministering, serving others? And go ahead and give us advice of what we, as, quote, those who are not in recovery efforts, what we can do to help.
Okay, so my plans for the future are just be obedient. I don't know what doors God is going to open, right? Brianna's Hope found Zach and I. We just don't know. We don't know. And I just hope that I'm available and have an open mind and can help in any way possible in the future.
We'll listen.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the future holds, but I'm excited for it. I'm super excited for it. And my hopes is just to continue to love everyone and support as many people as I can, and just give them the resources and the education that they need, because that's so important. You ask what people who have never been in active addiction can do, right? Educate yourself. Understand that people don't do drugs because they have the answers. They don't have the answers, or they wouldn't be doing drugs, right? Love them. There are hard boundaries that you have to maintain, hard lines that you need to draw in the sand, but draw them.
You have to, or you're getting into enabling.
That's right.
And that's not going to help anyone.
No.
One of our chapters, I just met with him a little while back, and a guy reminded me of an answer I'd given him back when they first started talking about opening as a chapter. He made the comment that he didn't have any experience, so what did he have to offer? And he said that I just looked him in the eyes and said, "Can you love them?"
That's right.
And isn't that where it all starts for any of us? You know, you've shared with us the beat downs, and I don't mean just the physical part, but what it does to the spirit.
Yeah.
And when we say no to people, and it's not a necessary no, we're just taking something from them that they needed.
That's
so
right.
As you said, we've got to draw lines in the sand for our good, and even more so for their good.
Absolutely.
But bend over and draw that line.
Mm-hmm.
Let them see what it looks like. Tell them what lies on both sides, and be open and give opportunities for all of that.
Right, because that is loving them.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's, you know, there are those of us who haven't experienced an unselfish love.
No.
It's been love with conditions and expectations that were not real, not healthy. So,
right.
Dania, before we get ready to kind of flip-flop here into our next part of this episode, is there anything you want to close this segment out with?
If you're struggling, there's, you know, one phone call away. If you need a church to go to, please reach out to me. You can find me on Facebook, Dania Dodd on Facebook. You can sit with us. You can sit with us. We'll meet you at the back door. Please just give it a chance. We have an Easter service coming up that's going to be amazing. I've invited so many people. And just give yourself a chance. Give yourself a chance. You're worth it. You are loved. You are valued. You are seen. And you're worth recovery.
Amen.
You never know where your life will be almost 5 years later.
And you never know the lives you'll be able to touch your recovery. Because I'm guessing you never dreamed of a moment like this. Not that this is anything that special, but in the place you were in your life at that time, the way you felt mentally, physically, emotionally, I'm going to guess it had to be an extreme dream for you to even imagine you would have the opportunities you've been given.
That's right. Yep. And early, you know, early in recovery as well. If you're hungry enough, you can do it.
Yeah.
You get hungry.
Yeah.
And soak up all the information that you can and just take suggestions and you'll quickly learn that you're able to do it.
Amen. Daniel, thank you. Thanks, Randy. For your vulnerability, your transparency, your willingness to share, to tell us your struggle and hopes that it touches others in a way that they can find what you have found in Christ, in recovery, in relationship, in family. You know, I'm sure you could add to that list, but I think we've hit the priorities.
Okay, that's
the goal. So I'm going to tell you what, we're going to get ready to get Zach, your husband, on board here. And when we do, folks, hey, make sure you like, you subscribe, click on that QR code if you want to support us financially. We have our costs. We have our expenses. God's treated us well. He's blessed us. But if you'd like to bless us too, we would greatly appreciate that.